Who do you think you are? Mick Jagger.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win, and the others too.
In a world filled with chaos where the dreamers struggle to find their way, there is a light. In an industry riddled with sacrifice and self-doubt, there is a voice. At a time when we need one another more than ever, there is hope. Houston, we have a program.
Welcome back to another episode of Houston, exclusively on Seattle Wave Radio. I am beyond elated today because we have a good friend of mine on the show today. And this guy is amazing. And you get to hear it all here from the comfort of your couch, your quarantine couch. So let's get on with it. Today's guest on Houston is none other than world-renowned guitarist Travis Larson. Namesake of the Travis Larson Band, Travis is the guitarist and frontman of this powerhouse three-piece instrumental rock band that includes himself, Jennifer Young, who, by the way, is going to be with us today, which is an unexpected surprise, but it's going to be awesome, and on drums, Dale Moon. With 7 studio albums, 3 full-length performance DVDs, recording with artists such as Steve Lukather, Victor Wooten, Dave LaRue, Vinks, years of touring with the likes of Ted Nugent, UFO, Steve Morse, the Dixie Dregs, the Aristocrats, Andy Timmons, Tony McAlpine, endorsements by Ernie Ball, Electro Voice, Mark Bass, and Sabian, Travis has had a very, very successful career. Additionally, Travis is responsible for all the intro and outro and bumper music that you hear on our show here at Houston. And he also did the music back in the day with the Aquarium. Travis, welcome to Houston, brother.
Oh, we're talking about me that whole time. Oh, okay.
I was talking about you that whole time. Yes.
There's 5 people in here and I thought I didn't know. Okay. Well, thank you very much. That's a very nice welcome. And thanks for making all that stuff up about my career being so amazing.
I did. What I did is I just went to Wikipedia and I looked up, you know, guys like Andy Timmons and Steve Lukather, right. And I just kind of put together a conglomeration. Hey, good to hear your voice, brother. Before we get going, you mentioned there's 5 people in the room. So let me just real quick, so the people out there listening aren't thinking that those are all your split personalities. So today with us is myself, Raymond Hayden, the host, your host with the most on Houston. Our special guest today, Travis Larson, the beautiful, talented, extraordinary Jennifer Young. She's in the studio. My one of my favorite radio talk show sidekicks, Cracky Mule Train.
Yay.
Live from Chicago. My bio is not nearly as impressive, though. I'm just sitting on a dirty linoleum floor drinking cheap scotch.
You know, that actually sounds pretty damn sexy. Today, I get to see
that. He's our favorite Chicago hookup, though, this guy. He's awesome. We'll talk about that later.
He is, absolutely. And then also on the line with us today, you may hear a peep from every once in a while, because that's about all he's capable of doing, is Mark Gordon, the owner of one of the owners of Seattle Wave Radio. All right.
Also, yay.
Oh, God. I want to know how much you're getting paid for that. So... Oh, man, I got to tell you, Travis, sincerely, I know we're doing a podcast, but man, I got nothing but love for you and your band. And when I know you guys are coming here to the Northwest and going to hang out here with Jessica and Jon Snow and I know that there's going to be great music. I know that we're going to be going to Denny's and watching fights.
Watching the fights. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. But hey, for the people out there who don't know you, which I don't know if there is, but I thought we would start out. Let's just go basic interview. Okay. We're going to get into the juicy stuff in a little bit, but let's just rewind here. Okay. And Crack, you jump in anytime you want. You're a guitar player, obviously. When and how did you get started playing guitar? And was that your first instrument?
No. So I started actually playing keyboards first. My brother had a piano in the house that he was taking lessons. He was older than I am by 9 years. And so when I was, say 7, 8, 9 years old, somewhere around there, I started plinking around on that piano. But the real truth is when I really started getting the buzz for music, and this is going to sound weird for the style of music I play and what people know of me, but, I got one of those little red Casio keyboards with the mini keys from the Thrifty's drugstore that's down in the town that we still live in. And, I was listening to the Rolling Stones, and I used to play along with the Rolling Stones with that keyboard on my desk in my room when I was a little kid. And so I was basically trying to be, you know, Ian Stewart, who was back then the piano player for the Rolling Stones, but I was doing it in my bedroom. You know, kind of like we are right now, sitting at my desk with, you know, a keyboard in front of me, except this one's a lot better.
It's the newer Casio?
Yeah, this is the newer Casio. And actually, that's the absolute truth. This is the newer Casio.
Is it?
So, yeah, oh. Yeah. It's a WK workstation. But
well, that's a good board.
Yeah. So the thing is, I played, you know, keyboards just kind of plunking around on it as a little kid trying to, you know, find my way on it. But that's when you're really getting high off of music. It's like your first boost of rock and roll in the morning kind of thing when it's still, you know, it's a brand new thing for you. And you're like, what is this? Why do I want to run 8 miles right now? You know? And right. So, and then, when I got a little older, you know, I started, we're older, say, you know, 13, 14, started seeing, you know, guys like Jeff Beck, Eddie Van Halen, stuff that we all saw in our age bracket, you know.
Eddie Van who?
Yeah, exactly. That guy, he didn't do anything for the instrument or to influence anybody, right?
Well, is that the guy that caused an eruption on the music scene?
Yeah, exactly. And you're hosting the show.
Sorry.
So, you know, all that stuff that we kind of grew up with. So I bought my first guitar from the Sears catalog, this kind of classic story that a lot of guys have. And that first guitar actually looked like it was actually painted like an Eddie Van Halen guitar, but it was, I think, a quart. And it was a really cheap guitar, probably under $100, and smaller than most, you know, real electric guitars. But that was my first guitar, and I didn't even know what distortion was. You know, Jennifer and I have similar upbringings where, you know, it was before all this internet and stuff, and we were kind of living in small towns in the boonies, and our parents weren't musicians. And so I didn't know anything about distortion or preamps or effects pedals or any of that stuff. And I actually discovered how to get distortion by plugging this guitar into a tape recorder. And about a month after I had it, I turned it up too loud and go, oh, that's the sound. I mean, this is how little of a blueprint we had. Like it was almost like discovering the instrument, like in the old Rush songs where, what is this strange thing, you know?
Well, you know, and yeah, exactly. I mean, that's part of the whole journey of music. And, you know, the thing that's interesting, and we could do a whole show about this, but the thing that's interesting about comparison with music now versus a couple decades ago, and when people are emulating bands like Rush and Pink Floyd and all this and stuff, you know, now keyboards, technology, plugins, all that stuff, those sounds are already there. I mean, you want a Wurlitzer, you want a Rhodes, you want an organ, you want distortion, you want clean, you want a blues, you want this, you know, different modeling amps, etc. Where back in the day, what you're talking about, you had to actually create those, you know, generically. And not generically, but organically. And that's
and to interject there, one of the reasons we still make our records miking real drums and recording everything is because, good or bad, it doesn't sound like anything that's been done before exactly. It doesn't sound exactly like it because we did it in our room with our microphones and our space. And so, you know, I mean, there's something to be said for that art form, right? I mean,
oh yeah, no, absolutely no kidding. Hey, just a real quick side note, just kind of on a personal note. So you said, cause we have Jennifer there today. We want to hear her talk. You said you both grew up in small towns. Was it the same small town? Cause I know you guys have known each other for a while.
Yeah, we met in high school, actually. She moved to the town that I lived in when she was, what, how old were you, Jen?
15.
15, yeah. So, but she lived in Temecula, I think. Is that right? Yeah. Lake Elsinore.
Well, yeah, that general vicinity.
Yeah, like Southern California, yeah. But the boonies, not Los Angeles, but kind of southeast of Los Angeles, I think. And I live halfway between LA and San Francisco in near San Luis Obispo, California, which is also a relatively small town. And certainly the suburb that I'm in is a small town. So sure. We're in now.
Sure. Well, no, that's a, yeah. I think that that probably helped you. There wasn't a lot of other things to do if you're in a small town. So it's kind of lets you get inside yourself and lock yourself, quarantine yourself, if you will. Right.
Right. Yeah, there's a zero adjustment this week to Jennifer or I, really.
Right.
I mean, yeah. Here's the biggest adjustment. She actually came over today.
Oh, there you go. Hey, and the good thing is I don't have to get a tape measure. I can tell that you guys are 6 feet apart. Right? So
yeah, she's back there in the other side of the studio. We've got the ventilators going. Yeah.
Right.
We've got the fan in the middle of the room blowing everything.
Blowing my germs right on you.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. So, yeah, you took my kudos there and just squashed them. So let's get back to that real quick. I think people will find that is very interesting. So you were talking about the fact that you were recording through a tape recorder and it was up too loud and it got distorted.
Yeah, it was a Fostex 4-track. If you remember those, because you're a music guy.
I had one.
And I still have mine in a closet somewhere. I don't think it works real well anymore. But back in the day, Fostex 4-track was a 4-track multi-track recorder that used a cassette deck. And it used, so a cassette deck was stereo on each side. And there were two sides, right? So it had dual pickups pressing on either side of the tape and splitting those into four mono channels that you could record on and then be able to mix down separately later.
Or the ping pong.
Yeah, so you do a lot of submixing. Like if you were going to record the band, you'd submix the drums, you know, down to maybe two of those channels so you'd have stereo, and then you'd put Jen on one channel and me on the other channel, something like that. And just that was the best you could do, you know. But
yeah, you look what the Beatles did with the 4-track.
But when I started with that 4-track, I was plugging that Casio into it and just stupid stuff like that, learning how to play and learning how to record, and then I got my first guitar, and the only thing I had to plug it into was that Fostex 4-track. I didn't even really have an amp, so I would plug it into that and play it, and I didn't even understand what the tremolo bar was for guitar players out there. I'd see, you know, people like Beck and Van Halen doing these things. I thought they were like making the guitar whistle somehow. You'd hear it squeal and do that pinch harmonic thing.
Oh yeah, I love those.
You know, like the Satriani thing. And I didn't understand how they were doing that. And I literally thought they were taking that metal bar and maybe like sticking it under the strings and prying the strings up or something. Like when I got this guitar, I didn't even understand how to use it. And this guitar, because it was so cheap, the bridge was really stiff. So pushing the bar down was really hard. And I just didn't understand how to work it. I didn't understand it. Oh, am I going to break it? And then I finally pushed on it and go, oh, I see. It moves the whole bridge. I mean, again, we had nobody telling us how any of this stuff works. Nobody. So we learned from ground zero with like no internet, no video, no nothing.
Well, you've seen this industry and instrumentation come a long way since then. So that's pretty cool though. I did not know that you did that. That's a very cool insight. Hey Jen, obviously bass is not an instrument that normally has a ton of distortion on it, but do you have any similar stories about when you first started playing, about how you developed your sound, or any behind the scenes kind of aha moments, like Travis was just talking about the tape recorder and distortion?
Yeah, a little bit. Like my aha moment was there was an actual instrument for bass. I didn't even realize that such an instrument existed. I started out like plucking around on an acoustic guitar and found myself hearing bass lines in songs, but I didn't know that there was an instrument specifically for that purpose. You know, I don't even remember how I learned that. I think maybe my dad finally told me, oh, that's a bass guitar. Oh, well, what's a bass guitar? I need to find out about this. And I was even worse off than Travis because I was so far out in the boonies. I didn't have MTV. I had 12 channels, I think. So I didn't have even visuals for these kinds of things. And
no Google.
Not even, no. I had like an no AM cable. An AM radio station and a turntable, and that was it. So yeah, my aha moment was, oh my gosh, there's an instrument dedicated to those sounds I'm hearing. And I did the same thing though. I plugged straight into my, once I finally did get a receiver kind of stereo, plugged straight in and was playing through the stereo system. And it was a whole different world back
then. That's actually something that we have in common. We both had a very similar stereo system where you could plug into the mic input.
Yeah.
And once we figured that out, you could amplify yourself.
Yeah.
So she had a double, was it a double deck or was it a single? I don't remember.
I think it was a double.
Yeah. Deck. Like we each had these old school double deck, cassette stereos in our rooms as kids. And we were both doing the same thing where you could plug into the mic input. And there was another thing you could do. This is before, I'm going to go back a ways, pre-4-track. This has got to be so boring to the millennials out there.
Yeah.
But before the Fostex 4-track, Ray, I could take that stereo and I could plug in and record, like if I was doing a cassette-to-cassette recording, I could plug into the microphone and record my guitar on one ear to that recording. So I was able to actually record stuff and overdub it on that stereo, but only two channels.
Oh my gosh.
Like this is discovering multi-tracking. Like, you know, it was like this stuff had all been invented, but we were so out in the boonies. I was literally discovering it. Like I was Les Paul as this kid, you right. know, just like, oh, I could do this.
You know something I'm telling you, I just came up with an idea here. I know Jen's going, oh God, here we go. Here we go.
An idea.
So one of my favorite movies that I've seen come out over the last couple decades was a show called, and I think most guitar players are familiar with this, It Might Get Loud, with Jimmy Page, The Edge, and Jack White. So everything you just described, now I'm being sincere here. I'm not being cornball, Ray. It would be super cool if you produced something like that. Even if you just like, you know, while you're quarantined, just like, I don't know if you still have any of that stuff, but how cool would that be to be able to like let people see that? Because I think
out the archives.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, sincerely, I think it's one of the reasons why people are going to enjoy this interview is because I don't think a lot of people know, you know, how far we've come. Seriously. Right. And it's interesting. It's not.
And I'm only 30, so I'm not sure how that could even be possible. But
yeah, and you're honest too, and humble. All those good things.
30 pounds.
All right. So there, you have an idea. If you make $1 million, then I want an album.
If I make $1 million, yeah, I have exactly. $1 million. I'm paying people to come to the shows.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Okay, so let's, you know, during this time of discovery, I almost feel kind of silly asking you this, but because it sounds like both of you at the same time were really...
It's briefs, Ray.
Briefs, yeah. Oh, geez, boxer briefs. You are on something. I love it. Just so everybody knows out there, Travis is normally very quiet. That's why I'm giving him a hard time.
What? Today. Since when?
Well,
what?
Yeah, but I'm in the comfort of my, you know... my domain here with my bass player. So
I like it. I like it.
Comfortable.
So, the silly question. So, I normally like to find out who inspires people. Sounds like you were doing a lot more discovery, but was there for both of you, was there someone who at the time while you were discovering your instruments that you really were tuning into that really did it for you?
I'm going to start with Jen on that because hers will lead directly into mine.
Cool. Shoot. Ladies first.
You mean musically, yeah. I guess? Yeah. Okay.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
I think this is a fairly well-known story for me that I found my brother's Rush Moving Pictures cassette tape I think it was somehow discarded. Like I found it in the, I don't know, a closet or the barn or somewhere.
Like in the corner of his room or something on the floor.
And I was at first intrigued by the artwork, as tiny as it was on a little cassette tape. I just, something about it, I was like, Rush, what could this possibly be? And so I listened to that and my mind was completely just blown to pieces. And that's where that started for me. So Rush was a big, big, big thing for a very long time. I didn't listen to much else, you know.
What else is there?
Led Zeppelin.
Yes. Okay. You got me. Chicago, Pink Floyd. No. Anyway, continue.
So Jen had discovered Rush and gone through her whole discovery of what a bass is while discovering Geddy Lee at the same time, which is quite a magical combination, right? If you're going to decide you're going to be a bass player and you've just discovered Rush, you know, you're going to, oh, wow, that's pretty
mind blowing.
Yeah. So while that's going on, I've seen Jeff Beck for the first time on MTV and like, you know, long time ago and gone, okay, I want to be that right there. That's what I want to be. And so I had my Sears guitar and my four track. And then I started, you know, figuring out how to actually get a sound that was reasonable and kind of right past that point where I was figuring all that stuff out. Jennifer moved here in like mid high school. She's mentioned like 15 or so. And we had a photo class together in high school. And so she was that bass player that walks around with their bass in high school. You know what I mean? Like,
again, it doesn't surprise me.
Just to let everybody know, I'm a bass player and I don't even care.
Barefoot.
Yeah. And I don't care if you know what a bass is. Yeah. When I met Jen, she didn't have shoes. She, you know, she would wear like those Mexican poncho pullovers, you know, like surfer pullovers and stuff, and totally looked like a hippie and was carrying a brown leather bass case around on her back. And so me being the nerdy shy kid who was just starting to figure out how to play guitar, I see her in this class. And so I hear her talking to somebody about her bass amp one day. She's like, you know, talking about, I blew up my bass amp. And so I muster up the courage to go talk to her. And I didn't talk to anybody. She'll, you know, she will support that. And I walk up and I go, I heard you talking about your amp. And she looks at me like, you know, like a little bit of attitude. And she's like, bass amp. I'm a bass player. Like, you know, she was assuming I didn't know what an amp was.
I think you had said, or you tell me the story is that I said amplifier.
Oh yeah. That's right. She goes, amplifier. I'm a bass player.
I remember none of this. I deny it all.
And so, you know, from there on, we started talking and the truth is she really turned me on to Rush. This is back in the days when going back to cassettes, you used to make cassettes for your friends. You didn't have to just shoot them YouTube links, 500 of them a day. It was more of a special thought out thing where you'd go home and you'd have to dub off songs for an hour. And
usually from the radio that you waited all day for them to play and then you missed the beginning because right. You're running to go record it.
Yeah, if you're really cheap, you would request songs on the radio, wait for them to play and push record.
Oh, yeah.
And so...
Yeah, they call that copyright infringement, Travis.
No. That's a mixtape for friends.
Yeah, you're not distributing.
This is the beginning of sharing.
She didn't charge me.
Right. Oh, okay. You're off the hook.
But at the end of the day, but she actually had recorded this stuff off of, she had, you know, her moving pictures cassette. She took some select songs off of that and she had 2112 on vinyl and she took some select songs off of that. And she made me a mixtape after I had made her a tape of some of the stuff that I was playing and gave it to me. And I mean, I can almost remember the exact order, but it was Limelight and YYZ and then Xanadu and a couple others. But the thing is, so then eventually, like a year later, because it took me a year to convince her to actually come over and jam because she was beginning and she was shy about actually playing. She just wanted everyone to know she played. and I, you know, was like, we got to jam. So finally she came over and neither one of us could really play at that point. But the first thing we ever tried to play was Xanadu, Rush Xanadu. I have to clarify that, because when we did an Andy Timmons tour and we, at a sound check, someone yelled, "Play Xanadu," and we started doing the Olivia Newton-John one because he was her musical director for years.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
So, anyway, so that's how the whole story began, with her and I, and with our main musical influence. She turned me on to Rush because she had gotten turned on to Rush from a tape that her brother had discarded. So
nice. So what we've already discovered today on our time in Houston is the fact that, how both of you kind of discovered your instruments and the real mastermind behind Travis Larson. With that being said, you heard what I said. Don't be coy with me, buddy.
I would not be sitting here if it wasn't for her. And that's the absolute truth.
And Jen, we've got that in recording. If you want that sound bite, right. We can send it. We can send it to you. Hey, just a side note.
So you can blame her.
We do. Just a side note. I'm just huge love Rush fan. You know, 2112 was such a great middle finger to the record labels for them. I just love that story. But for another show. Hey, you know what? Let's give you two a break for a second. I want to. Cracky Mule Train. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Houston on Seattle Wave Radio. Cracky is my Cracky Mule Train is my sidekick, back from the day of the aquarium and now Houston. So you've just heard all this stuff from Travis and Jen. And why don't you just give a snapshot of how you know Travis and Jen and what your perspective is, hearing what they just said, versus seeing them on stage.
Yeah. Well, real quick, I had 2112 on 8-track.
Nice.
It'd be like middle of a song and it would just like click over. Wow. So again, millennials.
Mm-hmm. You're old.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah, 8-tracks. That was one of my first real rock records. I remember I met Travis, Jen, and Dale through you, Ray. I was out there visiting you. It's got to be about 10 years ago now. And I was crashing with you and they needed a place to stay when they were coming through Tacoma to do a show.
They're needy, yeah.
Yeah, you were playing Travis Larson Band in the car for me when we were going to pick them up. And I'm like, as soon as they got there, I'm like, you know what? You guys remind me a lot of Andy Timmons. I lived in Dallas for a while. I got to know Andy and his music. And Travis is like, oh, yeah, we're good friends with Andy. And so going from that right into Travis Larson Band was super natural. Saw their first show. I'm sure I harassed.
We were all refugees on Ray's couch is the truth, right? We were all stealing a spot in the living room.
And just being the music nerd that I am, I'm sure I harassed you guys for 2 days straight until you guys finally said, hey, we're going to sleep. Go to your room.
Well, everybody except Dale.
But yeah, it's super cool. And friendship started there. And anytime they've come through town, always great to get together, see the show, and take care of each other whenever we cross paths there.
He took us to Sears Tower or whatever they call it now, but when we grew up it was Sears Tower, and we were coming through town one night, and he took us out for a deep dish pizza, and then we got to go up and see the highest building. And that was he's responsible for us actually getting to do something fun in Chicago besides straight to the stage and straight to the hotel.
Yeah. And then, well, and then we went to Greektown for some milk and cookies.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, that's right. Those
crazy rock and roll lifestyle.
Yeah. What's funny is he says milk and cookies and people are thinking he's being ironic, but that's actually not a joke.
Really? Interesting.
Because you know how hard I do, Ray. You know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I
hit it hard. I got that. I get the 2%.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, so I just had this kind of thought. I mean, you're telling me you did all this stuff and took them out and did all this kind of stuff. One thing, knowing Jen, it's very important. Jen likes to have her downtime in her jammies. So did that happen? Did you get your downtime in your jammies, Jen?
We stayed in a hotel.
Yeah, right? we were at a really nice hotel that was out by the airport.
Yeah.
And then, but we were stranded. The whole thing was it was a fly tour. Like we used to do these tours before we could get across, like we didn't have enough of a fan base to get across the states from coast to coast to make it feasible. So we would fly out and do the East Coast in a rental. And so the whole deal with this was we had flown out and we had a rental, and for some reason we had to dump it. And then I think we were flying out the next day or something, but we had a night where he picked us up. And then,
we were a little bit stranded.
It was so, like, we were just stuck at a hotel without any kind of car or anything for whatever reason that night. I remember.
I don't think I wore my jammies through the touristing of Chicago. Not for the touristing, no. No.
What? Did you go through withdrawals?
Yeah, a little bit. Oh,
oh, there.
I'd be wearing them right now, but you know.
Yeah. Jen, I'm telling you, Jen, it's a merchandise item. Jen's jammies. Jen's jammies. Hey, so we're going to be going to break here in a second. I got a question for you, Travis. And then we're going to go to break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about some heavy stuff about what's going on in the world right now. You ready?
For the question or the heavy
for
the, stuff?
You ready for the question? If you knew now, or sorry. Let me get this question right. If you knew then.
And you're the host.
Yes, I know this. You've reminded me of that twice, by the way. Next time you guys come here, you get the couch. Jen, you get the spare bedroom.
Right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. No, thank Travis. And this is a serious question. If you knew then what you know now, what would you tell your younger self?
I would tell my younger self, quite honestly, I think we've handled a lot of things really well, but I would tell myself to be more fearless for sure. Although I have definitely run at things, but it still scares the crap out of me. And I would say, that's the main thing is to go into it knowing just follow your heart and be smart about things. Don't be reckless, but run at things that you're scared at and don't be as scared of them. I mean, I run at them, but I'm still scared, but if I could relax a little bit, it would be easier. Right.
Yeah, no, I think that's great advice. Cause you know, especially with you guys being on here, there's going to be a lot of musicians listening. And I think that's some great advice for the musicians. Would you say the same thing, Jen, or do you have a different take on that?
As far as Travis is concerned, I would agree with him that yes, I would hope that he would tell his younger self that.
Oh, there you go.
What I would tell my younger self. I don't know.
That there is a bass guitar?
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, if you had dug in harder when you were younger, it'd be so much easier now.
I probably would have told myself to, you know, work a little harder when you're younger, because that's when you have the time and the
gumption.
The gumption, the spongy brain where you learn a lot.
Spongy Brain, by the way, my favorite alternative band.
Oh, there you go. Of course, there's a band named Spongy Brain. Well, I'll tell you what, we are going to...
We're actually
going to
look that up.
I hope they do. Please.
If it exists, I didn't really know that.
Oh, great, great. I'm going to get all kinds of emails and stuff. Mark, you're handling all those. Hey, so we are going to do something that we normally don't do. We normally ask for certain songs. We're going to go let our listening audience listen to you two talented phenoms. Your choice. What song would you like us to play?
Well, we should do something off the new record, right?
Sure. Golconda.
Okay. I'll go with that. I was going to say, yeah, let's do something we haven't played a lot. Let's see. Golconda. How about that?
Okay. Golconda it is. We're going to be right back. You are listening to Houston on Seattle Wave Radio with my co-host, Cracky Mule Train, and our guests, Travis Larson and Jennifer Young. Thanks for sticking around. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Travis Larson, and you're listening to Houston on Seattle Wave Radio. Oh, by the way, the music is provided by Travis Larson Band, and I'm sure you have better things to do with your time than listen to the show, but charity is always accepted.
She wears a crazy on the outside. Hi, I'm Jessica Lynn, and you will be listening to my new single, Crazy on the Outside, first on Seattle Wave Radio. Tune in on April 1st for a special 24-hour debut only on Seattle Wave Radio. To pre-save today, go to jessica-lynne.com. She wears a crazy on the outside.
welcome back to Houston. Mind bending, guys. Mind bending. Thank you for that. And why don't you?
The people have never heard such a rhythm in a blues.
Yeah,
that's what Ted Nugent used to say. The people have never heard such a rhythm in blues.
Oh my gosh! Well, it's funny. You guys actually toured with them too. So
we played with them. We didn't tour with them.
Oh, you played with them. Okay.
Yeah, we didn't. That's a long story. I won't tell too much of it because Jen will get so sick of the story.
Yes, everybody's heard it 100 gazillion times.
Well, obviously Ray hasn't.
Pretty sure he had.
But yeah, it was just we filled in for Leonard Skinner when their bass player died, and they were doing a dual tour with Nugent.
Bittersweet.
So it took them a day to get that together with a hired gun, and we filled the spot in front of 15,000 people that wanted to hear Freebird. So the joke is, you can't scare us in a bar when you yell Freebird, because we played for a Leonard Skinner crowd that didn't get to see Leonard Skinner and didn't know that they weren't gonna.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about running it stuff. That's running head first into stuff right there. Right.
Yeah. No kidding. I mean, obviously that's exactly. And that's a lot about what this industry is about is, I mean, just, you know, you take those opportunities when you can, and you have to always be prepared, for what you don't know. You know, you don't know what's coming next. So the better prepared you are, the quicker you're going to achieve your goals. Hey, tell us about your bandmates, and we know how you and Jen met. Has Dale always been your drummer, or did you?
He's been the drummer for the official Travis Larson band that you know, so he's been on every actual album that we've released professionally as we've been doing this as a career. But for I don't know, 7-8 years before that, Jen and I were going through drummers like Spinal Tap, and we were still learning ourselves. And most of the drummers we played with were still learning. And Dale, our engineer to this day, Kip Stork, who just did the last US or North America tour with us in the Aristocrats, he's still with us, and he introduced us to Dale. And oh, cool. He was a guy that was doing sound at a local club, and Dale was a guy that played in like the big, we were in a college town, and he was in the big kind of hip hop reggae party band of the time called Rocksteady Posse. And he was kind of like a Stuart Copeland type drummer with that band, where it was just hours and hours of just, you know, like a lot of hi-hat, a lot of kick drum, you know, on
a lot of pocket.
Just everything, you know, and he would do that for 3 hours a night. Like,
how was that again? 25 nights.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That was my scat. But he would do that 3 hours a night for like maybe 25 nights a month sometimes. And he blew out his
God. Oh,
so,
Jesus.
So so one of his arms was literally just hanging, like he couldn't play with it anymore. And that's when we met him. And our engineer to this day says, this is your guy. He can't play right now, but this is your guy. And so we basically just kind of ran with it and gave him a shot and stuck with him while he rehabilitated himself. I mean, he was literally working back to being able to play in a studio with us when he joined this band.
Wow. So, well, you guys, that's it's not quite the same type of story as Def Leppard with Rick Allen, but it's kind of like that. You guys, I mean, obviously you saw something, right? Well,
we trusted Kip, and we were, you know, like I said, we'd been going through a lot of drummers who weren't going to be Dale Moon.
Well, Dale, I know I'm biased, but he is a machine, man. He's a great drummer.
And it has a lot to do with everybody being willing to be part of this machine together. You know, it's like one thing, and everybody has to be in it, you know, to make it happen at the level it's happened. And so it's hard to find somebody that's committed enough to sleep on a raised floor, you know?
Yeah. Well, no, true.
I think personality wise, Dale was just also so easy to get along with and easygoing, and there, that had a lot to say about it, even though he couldn't play drums at that point. I think in our heads that was like a bigger deal than his chops.
Right, right. Well, and
I was going to say they go hand in hand. It's kind of this, you have to be able to get along, and they have to be willing, right? Mm-hmm. And so you find somebody that's that kind of already obviously in, and he always wanted to be in a band like this, and he was in a band the polar opposite of this for years.
Right.
And so he saw it and was like, yeah, I'm in. And we saw him and we're like, well, this is like the nicest guy we've ever met. And Kip, our sound guy, is saying, this is the guy, I'm telling you, he's your guy, you know?
Well, so you should thank Kip for sure.
Oh yeah.
I you know, you're reminding me that, the importance of the hang factor. And over all the podcasts I've done throughout the years, whether it's been local musicians or big rock stars or whatever, they've all had very similar stories about being a good hang. I mean, even when I interviewed, you know, thanks to you introducing me to Steve Lukather, Steve Lukather even talked about that when I interviewed him. I'm going to start with you, Jen, first. If you looked at if you were to put it in a pie chart of two things.
You had me at pie.
Ah, nice. What kind of pie?
If Dale was here, he'd say you had me at chart.
Oh my God. Jeez. You guys are too funny. Too funny. If you pie chart of with two components, one is skill and one is hangability. What would that look like?
That involves math on some kind of level, doesn't it?
I would say
like 70%, you know, the hang and 30, the skill.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Wow. Exactly. So I didn't want to talk over, but.
Yeah, no. And you know, that's okay. It's a conversation, but it's very, very important that people out there hear you, young artists, veteran artists, whatever. Again, two musicians who I actually admire and respect a great deal just said it's 70% hang, 30% skill. That doesn't mean you need to, isn't that what you said?
Yeah. I'm going to say that the hang, things that also fall under the hang category is obviously showing up and doing your job and being there on time and all that stuff. Right. So I don't want it to sound like, oh, you know, it could be misconstrued. I just like partying with this guy.
Yeah. No.
But none of us do any of that anyway, but it's really about Dale is very, you know, he's a lovely, warm guy, and he shows up for the game every single time. And that all falls under the category of hang, in my opinion. And then,
yeah, how good clarification.
And how many beats per minute he could play with his kick drum. I mean, that can be worked on with all of us, and we can figure out our strengths and limitations and how to make it work within the band. Right. But
yeah, I think that's powerful.
Yeah. But if you're not dealing with somebody that is part of the team and that you love, then move on to another team, right?
Well, no, I think that's a good thing. Again, people out there, 70% hang, you heard the clarification there. It's super important. I told my kid when he was wanting to start playing bass that I'd hook him up with I basically told him the same stuff. You know, you need to show up on time, have a dependable car, dependable equipment, and work on your skill all the time and just be a good hang. That whole good thing. So where would you put Cracky Mule Train in that pie chart with skill and hangability?
Well, his skill as it applies to us is can you drive us to where they have a deep dish pizza, and can you show us some cool stuff in Chicago? And whenever, if I'm in Chicago and I feel like I need help, I can call him, but
100% hang, 100% skill. 100%
both. Yeah.
Wow.
I have some bad news. I don't own a car anymore, so I just lost a lot of usability, you guys.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We got Uber now.
Well, so. We got the van now, so.
Yeah, but you can, if you can get to the gig, you can still be in there in time for load-in, so.
Yeah, Cracky, there's this really cool thing out there now called Uber.
Exactly. That's why I don't own a car anymore.
Yeah. Check it out on Google. Okay. This is great stuff. Hey, so there's a lot. I mean, there's so much we could, Jen, Travis, there's so much we could talk about right now with you guys. But you know what? People can go to your website and find out more. And I'm sure you guys have done other interviews and been in magazines and stuff. So let's thank you for sharing all that behind the scenes stuff. Let's take some time to talk about the current state of the music union. I don't think maybe a lot of people know that your band, and maybe I know this because we're friends, but your band, your brand, you guys have done this for the last couple of decades without the assistance of managers, labels, crowdfunding, handouts, et cetera. You guys have your own recording studio. that you guys record in, but you've had John Anderson from Yes, you've had Bela Fleck, who, if you have not heard of Bela Fleck, by the way, just a side note, go check him out. He is one bad mambo jambo on the mandolin, or sorry, not the mandolin, the banjo. Doctor, but anyway, you've also recorded Dr. John there, amongst others. So you guys have done this. This is you guys were doing DIY, which is, for those of you who don't know what that is, it's an acronym for do it yourself. You guys have been doing DIY before DIY was sexy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure it's sexy now, but
it's less money to the record labels.
But yeah, the reality is that when we got Dale in the band and we decided we were going to do this, we basically hunkered down with Kip, our engineer, and said, we're going to build a recording studio. And we took windows out of houses that were being torn down. We built every single thing in that studio, including the desk that the board was on and frames for monitors. And I mean, we're talking about 20 tons of drywall and something like, I can't remember if it was 100,000 or 200,000 screws or whatever. And it took us 2 years to build this thing. Like we were construction workers for 2 years to do this so that we would have a place that we could work for the rest of our lives or until, you know, they didn't lease it to us anymore.
Well, that's you've got to be pretty proud of yourselves, guys. I mean, seriously, I applaud. That's very impressive.
So I'll say, you know, going back to talking to other artists, but also applies to what we're talking about right now, because there's a misconception about a lot of artists because they look successful. And it depends on how you gauge success. I gauge success by you have friends that love what you do and they come out and we all share this energy together and get to communicate when we do a show. Right. So that to me is success, but there's, you know, I don't want to be a naysayer, but there's no money to be made in America playing instrumental commercial fusion music, really, you know, not money to be made like you could make if you just even went and managed a Walmart, you know? So the thing is, the first thing that we were taught ever by Steve Morris was keep your overhead low. Like that's rule number one. If you want to do this, if you want to be an artist and pull it off, keep your overhead low. And that means low, not low. Like, well, I'm going to try and cut down on, you know, I only got like 20 rolls of toilet paper instead of 100 rolls of toilet paper. I mean, like a roll of toilet paper at the dollar store until you need another one, that kind of low, you know?
or build a bodega.
Yeah, right. A what?
A what? No, so, that's sound advice.
I mean, we live lean and that's the honest truth. And so lean, and we're not, you know, completely, I mean, we embrace technology in the context of the band, but if it's frivolous or it's something that's unnecessary, just to put this out there, Dale bought his first iPad 3 days ago because of what's going on now. His first iPad ever. Like he's never bought a tablet or an iPad or any of that kind of stuff. I mean, you could argue he maybe should have, but he didn't because it was extra money that, you know, didn't need to go to that. So now he's teaching all his students full time Skype or Zoom or whatever format it works. And he's, you know, so we bought an iPad at Costco like Monday or whatever it was, you know.
Costco.
Yeah, Costco's half off though. It's retail or wholesale, right?
No, I just meant the line around the building.
Oh, yeah. The line was gone.
No, I think that's a sound advice. And I mean, but you know, living frugal is important, but I mean, out of necessity, it changes things. And I couldn't have thought of a better way to segue into what's going on in the world today with coronavirus and how it's affecting people. This morning I read a report the unemployment is in 2008, 2009, skyrocketed to 655,000. And as of today, it's 3 million. I mean, this is unprecedented changes, and it's really affected it's affected everybody. Okay. You know, the artists aren't any different than anybody else. Everything's being affected, but the difference with the artists are there's not really, if you're Joe Blow, who's working on an assembly line and you get laid off or furloughed, you can go to Walmart or CSV or QFC or Safeway, all these different places around here that are doing it. If you're an artist, I suppose you could do the same thing, but it distracts from your main function and goal as an artist and what you're doing. And this is completely, every artist I know that's touring and doing this, every gig's canceled.
Well, and that's going back to what I was saying about specifically independent music, for sure. The only way to make money for us, really, people are downloading less and less music. If you want to buy CDs and download music, that helps tremendously, but less and less people are doing that. So the only way we really stay alive is live performance anymore. And just speaking specifically for our situation, and I want to preface this too, saying we made a decision to do this, so I never hold anyone else accountable for that ever. But I just want to get across the realities, because you're asking, and the realities are, so we were out on the road all summer, and then we've been working on new material for the next record, and then we went out all January, and we kind of making the touring spotty so that we have time to work on this record. So between January and July, when we're supposed to go out again, we had some individual stuff going on in April, where I was going to go do some international clinics and some solo gigs. Dale's got all kinds of gigs he's doing for other people that, aren't necessarily out there known. And all this stuff gets pulled. And that was basically the stuff to carry the machine over. Well, we're working on this record. So you take away April, and now we're kind of all looking at each other like, oh, huh. And so those are the realities of it. And that's just our specific reality. But everybody's in that boat, and so everybody pulling together and trying to help each other is a beautiful thing. And I think the biggest thing we can do out there is be positive and understanding of each other, because everybody's in a similar boat,
Yeah, no, I absolutely. And I think you put it very eloquently, and it's a very good spin. I mean, I've seen it as before this happened, there was so much more hate being spewed out there on social media and this and that. You see so much less of that right now because of what's going on and the togetherness and all that. It's a beautiful thing. And it sucks that this going on, but it's at least there's that positive in there. Jen, is there anything you'd like to add to what Travis has said about what's going on? How it's affecting you directly?
Yeah, definitely in the same ways. We are all, as a band right now, wondering how we're going to get through the next few months, because that was supposed to take us through the year to work on the record. But like he said, it is a choice. And yeah, if it gets to the point where I got to go work at Walmart, I'll go work at Walmart. That's what artists have to do. They've always done, maybe not always.
I know what you mean. When something came up that required that, if the house was going to be foreclosed on or something like that. Yeah.
And also just an understanding of, Jen didn't mention, and I'm not going to mention specifics, but we've got family health issues as well. All our folks are getting older, and we've got some recent family issues that we're dealing with. And so real life, just like everybody else. Right. So this is just I'm going to say this one more time and leave it on the table, but this goes back to just try and be positive with each other, and don't go on the internet and just crap on people because they're struggling, because there's a lot of guys out there that are struggling with a perception of what their lives are like, because you see them for 2 hours a night under lights where they're doing something magical that they worked their whole lives to do. And that's all you know of them, but you don't realize, maybe this guy can't make his mortgage payment, even though I think he's a millionaire because he's got some nice lights on him.
Oh yeah. Trust me. There's the perception of the reality of anything, whether music, celebrity, you name it. I mean, I know that when I went to my 20-year class reunion, and I mean, I've had a career, day job in sales for the last 25 years, but I remember when I went to my 20-year class reunion, my classmates wanted me to play, and they treated me, it was crazy, all because I had CDs on Amazon. It's like, it's just, perception versus reality is a whole different ball game.
Right.
And that's leading into, Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Travis made a comment that we're all in the same boat here. And we are in this together from, you know, a humanity standpoint. We're all going through the same stuff right here and dealing with the same things. But there is a big difference from all these independent artists and gig workers. There's backstops for people on an assembly line who have a full-time salary job. They can file for unemployment. Corporations, you know, they're getting this $500 billion, you know, loans out there. But for the independent artists and all the people, you know, with the small businesses, and I see, you know, Travis Larson Band as a small business. Since you made that decision to go in, sure, build that studio and do this full time, you guys don't have that backstop. And for the people who are lucky enough, you know, to make it through these times pretty intact, this is time to step up and support, you know, all these independent artists that are doing the really cool stuff, keeping you entertained, bringing joy into your life year round. And even during these times, you know, the yoga instructors, your Uber drivers, you know, be positive and do all you can for people like this.
Absolutely. Well,
I appreciate that. That's, I'm glad you said that. And, again, going back to, I completely agree with that. And I agree with it as more of a fan and as an artist, I kind of stand back and you feel a little sheepish about saying, you know, well, I mean, I made this decision, so now I'm in this spot, but you know, the world changes and, you know, like Vince said, things happen. You could be back in the old days when they shut all the Ford plants down, you know, those guys dealt with similar issues. So whenever a group of people is going through something like this, I think the best thing to do is to be positive and supportive if you appreciate or benefit from what they do, rather than start coming down on them and saying, you know, whatever negative thing you could come up with.
And it's to the extent that you can. You know, I don't think you're expecting anybody who also lost their job,
correct,
and is trying to figure out how to pay their rent this month to you know, throw an extra tip in the jar. But there are people out there who can do it. And this is the time for those people to kind of step up and help out those people that, you know, mean a lot to you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It's great. No, it's great stuff, guys. I appreciate
now
all the
I
work.
See why you brought him.
Yeah, exactly. And see, because when he talks, you don't have to say, and I quote, "and you're the host," end quote. So,
If people saw that the whatever this program is, it's like a Skype program. If people saw the one picture of you, like we can all see our faces and you're sitting in the shadows, like you're in the witness relocation program.
Maybe I am. And maybe I'm not.
Mark should say something in this whole interview, you think?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, that's actually... thank you, Jen, because Mark always likes to sit in the back and just kind of be quiet. And actually, second thought, maybe that's a good thing.
Well, he's the engineer,
no,
right?
Just kidding. He is engineer, but he's more than that. Hey, just real quick, I'm going to go back to the very beginning of the interview, and I'm going to say that I really appreciate you telling me about that Casio and the Rolling Stones, because the next time you come up here, I'm going to go to a pawn stop. I'm going to get a little Casio and I'm going to have you perform Give Me Shelter in the living room, Casio.
No, it's not Give Me Shelter. It's the song Neighbors.
Oh,
and
Neighbors.
At the end, there's a pounding piano thing and that's all you can play on that Casio because it's monophonic.
Right.
There's a little line where it's just going ding, 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 ding. And then it goes, there's a little melody that it plays and that's it. That's what I was playing at like 7 years old.
All right. I know that. I just happen to like Give Me Shelter. Anyway, I am going to go with Jen's idea because that's a great idea. Mark, why don't you go ahead and unmute yourself because we want to hear your voice. But I'm going to, we're running out of a little bit of time. So we have a little bit more time left. But what I'd like to do is I want to pose this question to all of you. And because I am a gentleman, I'm going to let Jen go first. Okay. I know this interview is billed as the Travis Larson interview, but we got to bring him off his high horse, you know, get him off his.
Exactly.
So here's the question I want to pose to all of you. Okay. And let's go answers in this order. Let's go Jen, Vince, Mark, and then Travis. I'll let you wrap it all up. Okay. So I want to know two things. I want to know, and be honest, I know it's tricky and everyone has different opinions, but what are your sincere feelings about the explosion of all the artist streaming? And also, How do you feel about the virtual tip jar that a lot of these artists are using?
That you said we were running short on time.
No, you're fine. Go ahead. Mark can shoot me later. We're good.
I don't know. Everyone knows I'm not really that socially connected as far as all the platforms and stuff. I stay off of Facebook. I stay off of everything. So I do poke around a little bit, and I have seen the explosion of all the streaming. I appreciate it. Like I just saw one from Andy yesterday that was amazing, and I loved watching it. And so it's really cool. I think that's a good approach for people to come together right now when we can't physically go out, of course, you know. And then the tip jar thing, Travis and I have big discussions about this all the time because we are kind of inherently against that kind of thing, just in normal, not pandemic circumstances. But right now, I feel like it is important, and I don't feel that artists should beat themselves up over quote unquote having to do that, you know. So I don't know if that's a double standard on how I feel about it, but it seems necessary right now for a lot of artists. And like Vince was saying, if people appreciate art and what artists give them, then now's the time. And, you know, quite honestly, all the time is just right now is a little more difficult for everybody. It bums me out that art becomes one of the non-essential things in our society. That's
right
where I stand. And I think it should be considered an essential for our society.
I applaud that.
Okay.
Thank you, Jen. Appreciate it.
I'm sorry. Ramble.
No, it's fine. It was, I think it was well said. It was from the heart. And thank you. Vince, you're up.
No, I'm glad you brought this up. As a fan, I love it. I'm loving the live streams. I'm loving the virtual tip jars. I want to see more of it. I can't hit every one of them, but there's a handful of artists that I really love, respect, and love what they're doing. A lot of these are from their living rooms. It gives a lot of authenticity. It kind of gives you a little insight into their life. And people are being very genuine. They're not only are they just performing songs, but they're sharing their feelings. Mm. And it's really giving you a whole sense of community. It's giving you some hope. And it's giving you a little distraction. If you have a lot of anxiety, getting away for an hour to see your favorite artist do a live stream just kind of is a nice distraction from everything that's going on right now. It's bringing some joy into everybody's lives. They aren't perfect. And I know, I think I might have seen a comment from Travis, you know, worrying about, can we get this together technically to do something like this? I don't care how good it is. I just want to see out there. I love artists seeing, trying something, just giving back and doing something for their fans. That's really special to those fans. You know, I've seen artists, you know, get a song request and they're like, I don't know if I remember the words, but hey, let's give this a shot and see how it turns out. I love that. I love that kind of stuff. And, you know, there's local blues artists here, Melody Angel. She's doing one at 7 o'clock. Another artist out here doing one at 8 o'clock, Miles Nielsen, Rick Nielsen's kid. Great artist. Check him out. He's doing one. Some really cool stuff going on, and it's really helping me get through it as well. And puts a smile on my face when not a lot of other stuff is right now.
Well said from the perspective of a fan. Thank you, Cracky.
Yeah.
How about you, Mark?
Oh, am I?
You're up from the perspective from the owner of a radio station, or just from you. Just you don't have to. Don't worry about that. Just how do you feel about all this?
Okay, both ways, because I feel like both Vince and Jen that. There needs to be that art. And so it's like, you know, you can watch a ballet, you know, stream it or whatever, but to go and actually see it and experience it, that's really important to keep that art in society. But also with what's happening now with the health crisis, that things are going to change. We don't know a way or how for sure, but streaming, I think, is going to become a really important part of it. People might be more afraid to go out. They might start limiting, you know, how large the crowds can be. Don't know. But whatever the case is, I think that doing the live stream has been very good for what's happening to keep people, like Vince said, you know, from depression. They're being able to see the artists and hear some music and get that real life, because it is, you know, you've seen them in their living rooms and, you know, some are going from a studio, and that makes things really super great. So you're seeing all of that, but the reality is that they're there, and I don't see it as a, from them going on just to make some money. I don't see anything wrong with that. But I think they're also going on to actually contribute back to society of what we need right now. And that's
connection.
Still staying together, like that connection. Yeah, absolutely. So I think that it's going to be here to stay. I know they've been doing them, you know, all along on Facebook Live and that sort of thing. So I just think that it's going to get better as technology gets better. There's some good technology out there for it. And just like anything, you know, once you start doing it more, they'll become more a nicer production all the way around. And but even still, just watching some of them in living rooms, and that's just, and you feel like you're there with them and you know them personally, and they'll get better at doing them instead of maybe not necessarily just playing, but then to start actually just having a conversation with people that are out there. And some artists are doing that. And I think that would create a fan base that they might have never been able to reach before, that they would come out and see them. If, you know, once you kind of get personal with that. So I think it's good. And I think that they're okay with, you know, having that virtual tip jar, or, you know, maybe even in the future, there can be, you know, nice high production streaming that you actually purchase, like you would go in and purchase a cover charge, you know, and before you could even join the stream. Like, we just need to play it by ear.
Well, I appreciate your perspective on that. I mean, it's kind of coming full circle. Some of this stuff has already been around, but it's really getting amplified right now. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate that. So, Travis,
yeah, you're welcome.
Give you the last word on this topic, and let's just you know, those naysayers, let's don't address them. Let's address the people out there who do need the distractions, who are missing the connection. Talk to me, man. How do you feel about this?
Well, it's good to hear Mark and Vince's take as fans of music, because Jen mentioned we're kind of old school artists. And when we came into this, you know, we came from an era where the artist was not that accessible, and you were kind of more dug in specifically to just the art, but you didn't know what those guys looked like in their bathrobes in the morning and that kind of thing, you know? So, and we're very proud people that, again, started right from the beginning of just doing everything ourselves and being willing to eat, you know, $2 worth of food every day to get through periods of time. So to ask for help and those kind of things is really difficult, generally speaking, just, you know, as an artist. But realizing the value of it, going back to Mark and Vince, to people that say, well, it's really great to have a connection with you guys, and it's really fun for us to see more than just the produced DVD or whatever it is, or hear the album, but to actually see personalities and stuff. And I do get that, because you realize to have enough gumption to come out and do this for 25, 30 years at the level that we do it, it's because we are super fans. Like, we are the biggest fans on the planet of a band's, you know, bands say like Rush and Led Zeppelin and on and on and on. So whenever you would see a little bit of Alex and Getty doing a radio show like this or something, you're all over it. You're just, oh man, I'm in, you know, and that's the super fan in us. So to hear the positive feedback from people that actually appreciate you kind of coming out of the rabbit hole occasionally and showing a little more, you know, of a reality of your life and doing these streams and things like that. That's good to hear. And, you know, before we posted anything on our social media about this, and basically, you know, just for the audience, I had a lot of friends that are very well known and successful posting straight up posts for help, financial help, while this is going on. And coming from a point of view where, you know, again, Jen and I have been just like in the trenches hardcore. I'm not trying to blow us up. I'm just saying, you know, Ray knows. Like, we've toured, like, you know, we came from the Black Flag era of touring, and we've never stopped. It's us in a van with no crew, generally speaking, you know. So coming from that world, you know, it's like, yeah, we can, you know, we're not asking anybody to make this happen for us. We realize that we're making the choice to sacrifice that. But then, so I went on social media first, you know, as Ray knows, and I posted a big discussion about, is it even okay to be doing this stuff? What do you guys think? And just kind of asking people their opinions. And then we kind of dipped our toes in the water and said, okay, well, if you guys really want to support us, you know, here's all the links to our merch and download pages. If there's something you don't have, please grab it. And if you're really, really doing well, we did put a tip jar up. And bands started doing tip jars 10 years ago, maybe something like that. There's bands.
It's been
that just,
a while.
Yeah. It's they just leave them on their homepage 24 hours a day. Right. And so that's one of those things where for us, we're kind of like, yeah, I feel a little awkward about it, but, you know, like again, Vince and Mark saying, you know, art is that important to them as well. And trying to, you know, just being reminding of that, that, what you do is important to us. That's a good thing to hear as an artist. And so, you know, if you're asking my viewpoint of it, I would love to live in a world where we could be in a room together every night playing and sharing with people. But as long as we can't do that, I totally think that the miracle of technology is always, you know, this is one of the good ways to use it. If we have the technology to where we can all connect with each other and actually make sure that we don't all feel alone sitting, you know, especially people that really do live alone, you know, and you feel like you've got some people out there, then this is the right way to use technology. And this is the right way to help support each other and keep art alive in a way. So yeah, under the circumstances, I think this is a good way to use technology as opposed to all the bad ways that we see so much.
Ray, I have one thing to add to that. What Travis was saying is, and it just kind of just occurred to me, and I know that this is one part of society that really get overlooked, and that's people with disabilities. And there are people that, wow, you know, how many do you see in wheelchairs just down in the middle of the mosh pit? You know, right, you don't. Right. And for people with disabilities who can't get out, this would be amazing for them, you know, to be able to see more of that, of live streaming and, you know, right from the home, basically. I'm not talking about live streaming from a venue, which that could be done too, but it's still, you know, just that closeness and give them the opportunity to become really good fans of. I just was wanted to pop that in there about that part of our society that often gets overlooked.
No, I appreciate that, Mark. And thank you everybody for sharing your honest feelings. I know these are tough times. And I know, Travis, you also said that, you know, you guys are proud. We don't need to have a discussion on pride. All I would say is, you know, think about everything that was said today and, you know, apply that to what you have going on. And you know, I know how you guys are. You're hardworking. You want to give something back. Find a creative way that makes you guys stand out and do your thing, man. I mean, it's what you guys have to offer is great. And you heard Cracky and Mark, two fans of music, tell you that's just two people, but it's a pretty good segment. So anyway, I hope you guys heard what they said. And unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap things up because we've gone over a little bit, but that's okay. It's been a very interesting conversation, and we're going to do it again. We're going to at the end of the, when we say goodbye here, we're going to let the folks out there listen to another song. And this time, who chose the last one? Was that Jen? Mm-hmm. Jen chose the last song. So Travis, what song would you like us to play the people out today with of your guys's? Something from the new record or something from Soundmind or what?
I'm going to say something also from the new record that we don't play. I'm trying to think.
I don't have the new record in front of me.
And of course, it's not on a set list behind me. I'm actually sitting in the studio, but I don't have a set list because...
What's it sound like, Travis?
It's the one with the acoustic solo, but it's a rock song.
Oh, between the... Age
behind the age?
No. Between the. How do we not
we
know?
We don't even know our own titles.
Song titles.
This is I love that.
This is I love it. Which is why I'm saying we should. Distance between. Jen says, let's play the distance between.
Okay, cool, excellent. We'll do that. thank you for sharing those with us today. And just because we just talked about a bunch of heavy stuff, I want to do a light for Travis and Jen. I'm going to shoot some questions that have nothing to do with music, but just so people can get an idea more, you know, than Travis started out on a Casio and then you started out on acoustic guitar because you didn't know there was a bass guitar, which is all cool stuff. But ladies first. And so these are just some personal questions. And you can't even think about it. You gotta rail them out. You ready?
No, this is awful.
Is this like when Sammy Hagar does the this or that?
I can feel the yeah, exactly.
No, he does like it's like the Who's the Man. It's like you give who's someone two choices and.
All right, well, lay it on me. Oh, cool.
You ready? Okay, yeah. Okay, Jen. All right, take a deep breath and favorite color.
Green.
Favorite movie.
Wizard and of Oz? Can't? I don't know. Okay. Not really.
All right. Favorite food?
Any.
Okay, that's a good one. Favorite podcast host?
I don't listen to podcasts. Sorry. I mean, Ray Hayden. Oh, my God. That was a total fail.
I don't listen to podcasts. She doesn't even know that we're the bumper music, Ray. That's the truth.
I only listen to Ray's podcast.
Yeah, she's out of the loop. She just builds stuff all day in her house. She just builds furniture and yards. And
shut up.
That's all she does.
Okay.
I love it. I love it. See, this is, we're getting people some stuff behind who you guys are as real people. Okay. Last question. Favorite guilty pleasure.
Oh my gosh. Not
and don't
doing
say Dr.
Stuff.
Phil.
No, reading, right. Reading. That's actually reading? Just my favorite of everything.
Okay.
Reading
cool.
Books.
Excellent. Okay. And by the way, just shameless self-promotion plug here. You were talking earlier about Rush and moving pictures. Where can people find your book?
Oh,
moving pictures.
Oh, thank you.
On my coffee table too.
It's currently out of print.
Oh, it is currently out of print right now.
Okay.
Sorry. You two are the lucky two to own it.
Well, Jen has a really cool book out there and called Moving Pictures, and it's a bunch of snapshots from touring. It's fantastic. It'll eventually get back in print. You can buy it.
Yes.
All right.
You might be able to find one. I was just going to say, you might find one on Amazon or something like that. I don't know if they have some still in stock, but.
And I'm actually working on a second book. So that.
Yay!
One will be out eventually.
I want to buy one of the first copies and I want it autographed again.
Okay.
All right. Now, Travis, you're lucky. I didn't think about this. I went ladies first, but you got to hear the questions already. So you ready? Here we go.
I have a short-term memory, though.
Yeah, of course you do. Favorite color?
Blue.
Favorite movie?
Night Shift.
Favorite food?
Oh, man.
Free.
That's. Yeah. I'm going to say Jen answered that one for me.
I'm an opportunivore.
I'm going to use that term.
I like it. Now let's learn from past mistakes. I'm gonna say this last question, or the second to last one, really slowly. Favorite podcast host?
Mark Maron.
Cool. I like it. Okay. And finally, favorite guilty pleasure.
Now I don't know if Jen really understood what guilty pleasure means in the social podcast kind of way. So I am gonna say the Jan Hammer reissue of the Miami Vice soundtrack, which has every single piece of music he ever composed for that show on it.
Oh, really? Well, shoot. I thought you were going to say Doc.
Number two would be Jimmy Page's soundtrack for Death Wish 2.
All right.
Nerd alert. Well,
oh, my God. Oh, geez. All right. Well, I got to shut things down with that because Mark's going to kill me because he's got to.
Can we say something before you do?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, please do.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you mentioned Mark being the biggest music supporter in the Northwest, but you, Ray, are right up there with him. And anyone in the Northwest knows that Ray Hayden does more for music in the Northwest than anybody, especially live shows. And supporting artists like us when we're coming through, promoting shows, making stuff happen. You are a wild man, and you are a godsend to artists like us. So thank you.
Thank you, Ray.
Hear, hear. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. And you guys are making me tear up. God dang it. Damn it, Travis. You're not supposed to do that. No, but I do.
And I hope to God we get to come hanging with you in July like we're supposed to.
Yeah.
We're supposed to spend the 4th of July together. None of this is released yet, but I hope that all happens.
Oh, I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will. Well, it goes without saying, Travis, Jen, thank you so much for spending your time with us today.
Thanks,
Vince, you're welcome. Vince, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And we'll talk to you on the next interview, my brother. So we're going to go out today listening to another Travis Larson song. And Travis, before we say goodbye, tell everybody where they can find everything about you guys.
The most clear place would be TravisLarsonBand.com, TravisLarsonBand.com. And of course, if you look up Travis Larson Band on Facebook and all the other social media platforms, you will find us there as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much. For all those out there who joined us today listening to our interview featuring Travis Larson and his fantastic bass player, Jennifer Young, we appreciate you. Continue to support, love, encourage, and nurture each other out there. Have grace. You don't know what everybody else is going through when they react certain ways. So anyway, other than that, keep supporting music. It's what makes the world go round. Thanks for tuning into Houston, exclusively on Seattle Wave Radio. See you next time.
Thank you for tuning into Houston on Seattle Wave Radio. Keep an eye out for our next mission where we interview and unveil behind-the-scenes aspects of some of your favorite artists. Houston, Seattle Wave Radio base here. Our podcast has landed.
Paul's broken at last, broken at last. Paul's broken at last, at last, at last. He's broke today.
Yay!